You never know when God is going to bring someone into your life that will impact you forever. That happened 7 years ago to myself and Chuck Harrison as we were invited by the John Maxwell Organization to go to Lima, Peru and help train leaders and pastors in that country. And while we were there, our host pastor was Robert Beringer and his wife Karen. Robert was a surfer from Southern California that God called him into the ministry. He had a heart to go to Peru to be a missionary. He's been there for 29 years. Not only is he a pastor of a large church, but he's also an influential pastor, training and equipping other pastors all throughout Central America and Latin America. We're honored that he's here this weekend to share with us at CCV. He has a brand new book out that you'll have a chance to get later entitled Honor Found, Experiencing the Power of the Honor Principle and How It Can Add Significance to Your Life. On both of our campuses in Surprise and in Peoria, would you help me give a great CCV welcome to my good friend and pastor, Robert Beringer.
Greetings. Now, come on, I'm from South America. You're allowed to talk back, even if it's on video. You can just... What a blessing to be here. What a great church this is. When John Maxwell's group wanted to do the Million Leader Mandate, they contacted our office about being the training and the host church, which we were thrilled to do. But they also told me, we're sending you the dream team. And we got the dream team. When Pastor Don and Chuck came down and just served and taught the pastors, it has been amazing, and it is continuing on. What they started is now going on generation after generation. They taught men who taught other men who've taught other men. And I believe a nation is being touched because your pastor came down. Really, it's an honor to be here. And as your pastor mentioned, I grew up in Southern California. If anybody has ever seen that little skateboard movie, The Lords of Dogtown, before... The Zephyr had team had a skateboard team. They had a surf team, and those were my guys. I hung out with them, grew up in Santa Monica. My only desire in life was to be a professional surfer. It's amazing what God can do. It's amazing what God can do. I wrote this book, Honor Found, based on a couple simple principles, and I'll share some of these principles today. What a great day to share it. We're actually on the front end of launching this book, and it's Memorial Weekend. The principle that I wrote on the book, or that we used as one part of the principle to write the book, was what Winston Churchill said, a nation that fails to honor its heroes will soon have no heroes to honor. A nation that fails to honor its heroes will have no heroes to honor. And I thank God for being from the United States. I no longer live here. In fact, I've been in Peru for going on 30 years. My kids grew up in Peru. They married Peruvians. I've got 3 Peruvian grandbabies, so they're going to bury me in Peru. We love the culture and the nation that God has allowed us to work in. We love the work that He's called us to do. But I will say this, we are over our heads. And whenever you're over your head, it doesn't matter how deep you get. So I want to share just briefly this principle of honor, and I want to use this little story in the book of Chronicles. You might have read, there's a book that came out, The Prayer of Jabez, and it talks, only 2 verses in the Bible talk about him, but it talks about a man named Jabez. Now, before I read the 2 verses, let me just say this about Jabez. It's in one of these parts of the Bible, if ever you do your daily Bible reading, you just kind of read over fast. It's so-and-so begat so-and-so, who begat so-and-so, who had a son named so-and-so. It's like 600 names. And it's the kind of thing that you just kind of read through really fast. But if you read too fast, you skip little parts like this. Where God, it's almost like God says in the all these names, 600 names, he stops and he says, wait a minute, let me tell you about that guy. And then he goes on talking more about names. Now, names can be pretty boring unless your name is in there. If it's your name in there, I guarantee you, you'll have a line under it, a yellow marker on it, a little star by it, and arrows pointing to it, a marker on the page, and you'll be showing all your friends, look at that. You know, and how many are thankful that there's another book of names being written right now? It's called the Lamb's Book of Life. And I know when they get to some of your names, your family's going to do a little wave in heaven. You know, I know mine is. I'm going to have some angels doing a wave in heaven by the time I get there. But it's, in all of these names, what is it that makes him stand out? In 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verse 9 and 10, I want to quickly read the two verses that mention Jabez. It says this: Jabez was more honorable than his brethren, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, "Because I bear him with sorrow." Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that thou wouldest bless me indeed and enlarge my coast, and that thine hand might be with me, that thou wouldest keep me from evil, that it may not grieve me." And God granted him that which he requested. Jabez, out of 600 names, it is like God stops and says, "Wait, let me tell you about Jabez." And all it says about Jabez is just a few words. The Message Bible, I like the way it starts. It says, "Jabez was a better man than his brothers, a man of honor." Jabez, the first thing we see about him is he was a man of honor. What does it mean to be a man of honor? I actually, as I was studying this theme, and it's been kind of a theme that's taken me a long time to write, and as I was thinking about the theme of honor, I went to the Hebrew, and in the Hebrew word for honor is kabod. It's the same word translated glory, but the literal translation of kabod means heavy. For the longest time, I wondered, what is heavy about honor? Why is honor heavy? And you really understand what is weighty or heavy about honor when you think about the opposite, light or lightly. In other words, dishonor is taking something lightly that we should put the proper weight to. And there are certain things in our life that we should never take lightly. There are things in the Bible, we've taken the communion service a little while ago, and Jesus, his own words were, "Do this in remembrance of me." In other words, don't take it lightly. Never forget the price I'm paying. Never forget the cost of Calvary and the cross and the blood that has been shed. Never forget. Remember this. And if you go through the Bible, there are certain things that we are to never forget. When Israel crossed the Jordan, they took 12 stones out, and they were told, when your kids ask, "What are these stones?" God said, "It's a memorial." In other words, it's a place of remembrance. When your kids ask, "What are the stones there?" you tell them the story. We used to be over there, now we're over here. How many used to be there, and you're not where you were, you're over someplace better? Amen? So it's a memorial, and Memorial Day is that's exactly what it is. It's a time to remember. It's things that we shouldn't forget. Now, when I think about these words that I've already mentioned, Winston Churchill saying this, "A nation that fails to honor its heroes will have no heroes to honor." And as I think about that, we can take that to the church as well. A church that fails to honor its heroes will have no heroes to honor. Some people will say, well, should a church have heroes? Yes. We need reproducible heroes. I remember when I just got saved, and I was just coming off the beaches in Southern California, barely saved. I mean, I used to come to church just to see if they'd kick me out, and I would literally leave my trunk marks on the pew and park my surfboard in the back. But they loved me into the kingdom. And some ladies in the church started passing me these missionary books, books about a guy named Bruce Olson, Brucheco. What an amazing hero of the faith, how God called this young man to go to Colombia to a very primitive tribe. The tribe actually shot arrows into his body several times before he finally convinced them to listen to him and won many of the tribe to Christ. Of how there were five missionaries that went into the border of Ecuador and Peru to a primitive tribe called the Auca Indians, and how one of these missionaries journaled how excited they were. Nate Saint and Jim Elliott, they journaled how excited because they made positive contact with this tribe, only to have the next day that same tribe kill them. The amazing end of that story is the wife of Jim Elliott, Elizabeth Elliott, later went in and won her husband's killers to Christ. That entire tribe was transformed because of some heroes of the faith. And we can go into heroes of the faith. George Mueller is one of my heroes of the faith. George Mueller, who had a philosophy, I'm going to talk to God, he'll talk to you. And through this philosophy of just believing God for miracles, ended up saving 5,000 or more orphans in Europe at the time. And I remember when I read that, I said, God, if you can do it for him, can you do it for me? And God's allowed us to plant several orphanages in South America, and we thank God for that awesome privilege. And believe me, what God did for him, he's doing for me. Now, you see, we need reproducible heroes. The heroes in society today aren't reproducible. You can't reproduce Thor and Spider-Man. We have other heroes, and what you honor in life will be attracted to your life. And we all honor something. We add weight to something. We put weight in our life to certain things. And unfortunately, we honor things like Lady Gaga. We honor, football heroes. We see these football stars like you have here with Arizona Cardinals. And if you got, you know, a guy, I think Larry Fitzgerald is a Cardinal, isn't that right? If you got this Larry Fitzgerald, and he makes an amazing touchdown pass like only he can do, and everybody in the stadium stands up and applauds Larry Fitzgerald, and we give him honor, does he deserve that honor? No. You paid him to do it. Lots of money. And if he doesn't make that amazing catch, you fire him. You see, honor comes when you're on the second mile. Honor is never doing just what we're supposed to do. It's always above and beyond. This morning as we walked on the campus with the pastor, there were some people out there just cleaning the campus. And as I saw these people out there, I could just see pastor saying, these people are so precious. And he began to talk about them. He was telling me this story about somebody who comes in a Jeep and parks around 5 acres of land and just walks through the parking lot and cleans up the papers out there. The unseen heroes. The real heroes that make this whole thing come together. The ones that just doing enough isn't enough. They want to go just a little farther than just enough. See, honor is when you go just a little farther. I want to tell you a story about that. A nation that fails to honor its heroes will have no heroes to honor. One of the greatest nations that knows how to honor its heroes is the United States of America. And that's what this weekend is about, Memorial Weekend. I frequently travel to Washington, D.C. And in Washington, D.C., the memorials there are stunning. If you go through the Vietnam Memorial and see those names, and then your reflection as you're watching those names, your reflection as you watch that name almost says, am I worthy of the freedom and the price they paid? One of my favorite memorials is the Korean War Memorial because it's almost a reenactment as you see soldiers walking through as it would be a rice paddy. And at the end of their walk, there's a wall that just says, freedom is not free. One of the most amazing places in Washington, D.C. is Arlington National Cemetery. The honor that is paid at that cemetery to the heroes of this nation, it's amazing. And one of the greatest places in Arlington Cemetery is that place called the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. In this tomb, there are three soldiers that are buried. There's a soldier from World War I, a soldier from World War II, and a soldier from the Korean War. Three soldiers. And on the tombstone, and I have a picture of the tombstone they're going to put up now, it just makes this statement, here rests in honored glory an American soldier known but to God. Here rests in honored glory an American soldier known but to God. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody knows who they are. Let me just ask a question. Would you be somebody's hero if nobody knew it was you? Would you be that hero for somebody like these unknown heroes to so many of us that right now are taking care of children or behind walls watching videos and making the sound work and making the church work, the ones that come early? Would you be somebody's hero? Would you go the second mile?
The amazing thing about this tomb is these men, they had a mom one time and a dad that they were so proud of when they were born. And as the child grew, that child said, our nation is entering into conflict. And they felt the call to go and defend the values of this nation. You can almost imagine the day the parents heard there was a battle overseas and your son was involved and the prayers that went to heaven saying, make him safe. I hope he comes home safe. And then they heard nothing. All they heard was missing in action. Missing in action, they kept waiting to hear news and hoping that someday their son would come home. If only they knew that where their son was put to rest. And the honor that was given their son. You see, in front of the tomb of the unknown soldier, there's a sentinel, a guard. The top 1% of the 39th Cavalry, the old guard, gets tomb duty. The best of the best. These men make a vow. They don't take it lightly. They take a vow. If they do tomb duty, they will never swear one swear word the rest of their life, and alcohol will never touch their lips again, just because they're tomb guards. They shine their shoes a minimum of 4 hours a day, and they march in front of a tomb that nobody knows the name but God. They'll take 21 steps, stop for 21 seconds and face the tomb, and turn for 21 seconds, and walk 21 steps, and stop for 21 seconds and face the tomb for the 21-gun salute. And they've done this every day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 2 in the afternoon or 2 in the morning, 100-degree weather or below freezing, snowstorms, hailstorms, rainstorms, it doesn't matter. 24 hours a day, every day since 1937, they've carried a guard honoring three soldiers that no one knows their name but God. To me, it's almost like God said, those three are mine. Those three are mine. I have a video of some sentinels marching in a snowstorm, and I want to tell the story of what happened. Because a few years ago, as you watch the video, a storm was coming on Washington, D.C. It was a hurricane, Hurricane Isabel. And as Hurricane Isabel bared down on Washington, D.C., for the first time in history, the commanding officer told the sentinels, stand down if the wind gets too strong. Don't continue the vigil if the wind is too strong. And one of the soldiers said, darned if I'm going to be the one that stood down because of a little wind. The next morning when they continued the march, they found them marching. It was downgraded to a tropical storm, but trees fell around them. And they asked him, did you march all night? And they said, yes. Well, why did you march? And the man said, because my brothers are dying in Iraq. How can I tell my brothers in Iraq that we didn't march because of a little wind? And they said, but you marched. Was it dangerous? And finally, one of the soldiers said this, our debt to duty is not part-time. Our debt to duty is not part-time. How many of us, when Jesus said, don't take this lightly, do this in remembrance of me, we don't understand, really understand what he's done for us? We go to the pastor and we say, Pastor, I read my Bible this week. Good, you're a Christian. We do that. Well, you know, I shared my faith with somebody today. That's really good. You're a Christian. You're supposed to. It's like Larry Fitzgerald. If he doesn't get a touchdown, you're fired. Thank God he doesn't fire us. And then, well, Pastor, I give my tithe this week. That's really good. You're a Christian. You see, honor comes when you go above and beyond. To me, the honor were those cleaning the parking lot this morning. The honor are those in the nursery right now taking care of kids. And the honor are the ones behind the wall, the unseen heroes, the one that nobody knows who they are because they're just serving the second mile. You know, there's two things about Jabez. And the first I've already mentioned, he was a man of honor. A man of honor. Honor will get you beyond a circumstance because the second thing we hear about Jabez is it says he was born or birthed in pain. His mom called him pain. In other words, there was pain around his life. There is something painful about his life. Now, we don't know if that was, did his wife or his mother have a painful childbirth? We don't really know. If you look in the context, it could really say that maybe the nation was in a crisis and she had to raise a son in a nation in crisis. Maybe there was an economical crisis in the nation and she was crying out, now what am I going to do? I've got a son. Maybe she was a single mom and didn't know, how am I going to raise this son in under these conditions? Or maybe there was just, you know, family situations, and on top of that, now she has a son named Jabez. And all it says is there was pain in his life. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever gone through a painful time in your life? Has there ever been pain in your family, on your job, in your relationships, in your finances? Have you ever known the pain of bad habits or the pain of maybe a faulty relationship with Christ? I remember when I went to Bible school, man, that was an interesting journey. I'm a surfer. And in Bible school, they worked us over. I mean, in Bible school, they made me put a tie on. A tie. I didn't know how to do that. So I went and I searched and I found out it must have been a surfer that invented it. Some amazing guy invented this cool invention called clip-on ties. So I clipped it on every t-shirt I had and went to Bible college. They didn't think I was going to make it. You know, there was a lot of situations. I had teachers that told me things like this: you'll never make it in the ministry. Just go get a job. You ever have words that cause pain in your life? Teachers, Baptist Greek teacher. I never knew Greek. I didn't know English. I didn't even know you needed to know English to know Greek. And I'm trying to study Greek, and it's just not going in. And the teachers are telling me to give up. And I'm crying out to God, God, can I really serve you? The cool thing, and I'm just going to mention this, I now pastor one of the largest churches in South America, and my Greek teacher sells cars. I'm not happy for him. I'm just really happy for me, okay? I want to clarify that. But it's amazing what God can do. You see, Jabez, there was pain in his life. I mean, they thought, when I said I want to be a missionary, it was like my pastor said, yeah, right. Yeah. And I thought, you know, it's easy. I could do surf safaris. What's the difference? I can go to the Amazon, give me a dime, a cup of coffee, I'll go win a tribe. Well, my pastor, when I went to the mission field the very first time in 1978, we went to check out the mission field and we went to Peru. And on the way into Peru, my pastor calls ahead of me and he says to the missionary, Robert thinks he wants to be a missionary, so give it to him tough. So we landed at 8 in the morning, 8 o'clock the next, or 8 at night, excuse me, and at 8 o'clock the next morning, we're on a 26-hour bus ride to Ecuador. Now, I'm allergic to fish. But, you know, I was taught, if you're a missionary, eat what's put before you. Wait, fish all the way back to Lima for 3 weeks. I didn't care too much for Peru. I was sick the whole time. But we finally got back into Lima, and I'm thinking, okay, that was a trip. I mean, there's some great surf here, but I don't know if I can handle the mission field. And I think, okay, Lima's pretty cool. But the next morning, they put us on a bus ride up into the high Andes Mountains. First place we went was a mining village called Morococha. And Morococha, it's a village at 17,500 feet. And I had heart surgery. I shouldn't have been in that altitude, but I'm feeling pretty good up there. And I like the view and the mountains, and the food's a little better in the mountains. So I'm feeling like this is actually a nice place. And the next day we go to another city. It's a big city called Huancayo. And Huancayo was really a cool city. Well, the next day we go into a little village called Pampas. Now, let me explain, because Pampas is where God really called us to the mission field, I believe. On the way into Pampas, our translator was telling me a story. You can only get in there. It was dirt roads, barely a road in those days. And there was no lights, no running water, just a little Indian village that lived like it had lived for about 2,000 years, still worshiping 22 Inca gods, sun, moon, rain, thunder, corn, whatever. And they would offer animal sacrifices and even occasionally a human sacrifice to these Inca gods in this little village. And on the way in, our translator was telling me this story of Pastor Moses, because a little while before, about 6 or 8 months before we were bouncing in this dirt road to get into this village, Moses felt God called him to plant a church in Pampas. Little Peruvian guy, not very high. And Moses said, I'm going to go to the village. I'm going to raise a church there. So he did what the Apostle Paul did. He went to the village, and on the weekend, they have a market in this central area. So he went to the market, and he began to preach the gospel. The local religious leaders determined, we don't want that here. So they took and ordered the people, stone him, leave him, you know. So the people came out, and they stoned Moses and left him for dead. When the translator was telling me this story, I'm thinking, they stoned him? This is the 20th century. I said, wow. And then Moses, they threw him in a taxi, very beat up and injured, took him back out for about a three-hour taxi ride into Huancayo, and in Huancayo, put him in the hospital. 30 days later, he gets out of the hospital, and he feels that nudge of the Holy Spirit, now go back and plant a church. So Moses gets back in the taxi, and he's bouncing back over the fields into Pampas. And on the way into Pampas, he's casually talking to a little man next to him. And the man says, where are you going? I'm going to Pampas. Why are you going to Pampas? Because I want to put a church there. And the man said, I think they tried to kill somebody recently that tried to do that. And Moses said, that was me. The man looks at him and kind of shakes his head. I got a friend here. Talk to him. He might be able to help you. So Moses, now armed with a little piece of paper, goes in there, finds this little address, a little, you know, like a little shack, knocks on the door. A little Indian man comes out and he says, can I help you? This guy told me to talk to you. Well, what do you need? I want to preach the gospel here. I don't know. I want to plant a church. And the man said, we tried to kill the last guy that tried to do that. And Moses said, that was me. So the man looked at him, thought for a minute, walked in the house, came out with a little banner. He was the mayor. And he went to the four police in the city and ordered all four police to give Moses police protection. Moses goes out there and preaches the gospel in the marketplace, and not many people gave their heart to the Lord, but the mayor was one of them. And now we're bouncing in 6 or 7 months after this, and we get to baptize some believers, and I'm thinking, man, this is cool. I can't wait to take a picture of Moses and go tell his story. What an awesome, this is New Testament. This is like the book of Acts. And we get in there, and it was my turn to preach. There were 17 Indians, dirt floor, candles on the wall, little thatched hut, and we're in there, and I preached my heart out, my best Bible school message. I put all 17 to sleep. I mean, they were out. And I wasn't feeling too good. The mayor comes up afterwards, and he goes, before you leave in the morning, will you come to my house? We said, yeah, it would be an honor. So we go to the mayor's house in the morning, and he serves us breakfast, and he comes up to me, and he goes, thank you for coming. No, thank you for having us. He goes, no, since I've given my heart to the Lord, they've tried to kill me 3 times. And I thought, wow, I need your picture too. And he goes, no, you don't, thank you for coming. No, thank you for having us. No, thank you for coming. No, thank you. We got into an argument. And Moses finally hears the argument, comes running over. He goes, no, Robert, you don't get it. Thank you for coming. No, thank you for having us. No, listen to me. He goes, every time people come to Peru, they go to the big cities, Lima, Arequipa, and Cusco. They never come to us. We're the forgotten pastors. And all of a sudden, I realized it didn't matter how good I preached. What mattered is that we went. It didn't matter the message. See, sometimes if you ever go to the mission field, it's almost like the devil will lie to you saying, what good are you doing here? You should have just sent your airplane ticket over. But the Bible doesn't say God so loved the world, he sent an offering or a fax. God so loved the world, he sent a physical body, his son, who left a comfortable place to go to someplace uncomfortable to help some people like you and me. And missions is just that. I realized later by us going there, we raised the stature of that pastor because people began to ask, who is this man so important that people come so far just to come and talk to him? And I realized just us being there helped him. So we got on our knees, my wife and myself, and we said, God, if you send us back to Peru, we will always remember the forgotten pastors. We'll never forget that. I thank God I didn't listen to the words that hurt from my Greek pastor, teacher. I thank God that we were able to go beyond that. Because today, God has helped us to do some amazing things. Some of the people that hurt the most in third world countries are the disabled. Johnny Erickson came to our church a number of years ago, and she was going to speak in our pulpit. If you know who she is, she's a paraplegic and an amazing artist, a great gifted speaker. And when she came in, she brought a container of 400 wheelchairs and said, just pass them out. And I said, to who? To disabled people. Oh, where are they? They're hidden in people's backyards or in their house. And I realized that the disabled in third world countries, people, they live at the mercy. The government can't give them a wheelchair, so they live at the mercy of a parent, an aunt, an uncle, a cousin that has to pick them up and bathe them and put them back and feed them. And sometimes their transportation methods are very crude. And she said, just give them away. So I heard there's a shanty town outside of Lima with some disabled people. And I just said, well, God help me. So I went out there with a megaphone. I said, anybody that needs a wheelchair, we're going to give away free wheelchairs. If you need a wheelchair, just come. I brought 50 chairs. I thought that would be enough. We had 400, but I'm going to try with 50. And I thought maybe some people would come out because we go there and I've never seen the disabled people. But when we went there that morning with those 50 chairs, I was not ready for what we saw when 7,000 people came crawling out. In the dirt, most of them, some in wheelbarrows, some on the backs of people. One of the hardest things to do is when you see that much and you say, oh my God, now what? A friend of ours told us of somebody named Don Schoendorfer. He has a ministry called Free Wheelchair Mission, and we contacted Don Schoendorfer and Free Wheelchair Mission and said, can you help us? And Don said, I've got a container right now. Can you handle them? I said, yeah. So he sent us that container. It's a funny-looking wheelchair Don makes. It's mountain bike tires, and it's because the roads are uneven in third-world countries. It's a plastic lawn chair, but you can take a bath in it, and you don't need a medical mechanical engineer. Any bike mechanic can fix it. So we started passing out wheelchairs. I've got a short video I'd like to show you of the wheelchair ministry. To date, we've given away 50,000 of these wheelchairs. You see, Jabez was a man of honor. There was pain in his life, but he prayed. And his prayer was this, God, make me bigger inside. You see, Jabez basically said, I don't want to live like this anymore. I don't want this pain to define me. this isn't my future. This isn't my legacy. I don't want to live like this. So don't let the pain of your past limit the potential of what God can do with your future. If God could take a surfer like me and use me, God can use anybody. It just takes somebody to say, I'm willing to go the second mile. I want to live with honor. God, make me bigger inside. I promise He will. God bless you.